Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Laura Blundell.
And this is a podcast version of your weekly edition of Movie Chat, broadcasting on RTRFM 92.1 Friday mornings with breakfast host Pam Boland. And on the Movie Squad podcast, we discuss new cinema releases. We discuss art house movies from other countries. We also discuss big blockbuster franchise sequels that pull together two actors and characters that we may have split opinions about. But what is the film that you talk about in this episode, Laura?
The new film Totem by writer-director Lila Aviles.
And I am going to be talking about Deadpool and Wolverine, Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman together at last in this new film from Marvel Studios. And we're going to chat about it right after we hear some audio from the trailer now.
I know I turn everything into a joke, but I care. And I want to use that for something important. I waited a long time for this team up. In my world, you're well regarded. You were an X-Man. Fuck that, you were the X-Man. The Wolverine. He's a hero in my world.
Every Friday on Breakfast, we take some time for the cinematic arts. We look into the brains of the blockbuster babes. Simon Morato is away on assignment. So your babes this morning are Laura Blundell and Tristan Fidler. Good morning.
Morning.
Wow, I was way more enthusiastic and you look alarmed by it. You're like, what's she going to say? No, it's exciting. Laura, we last caught up with you back in May to talk about The Beast, but you're back here for July. It's gotten a little bit colder. Are you rugging up more? Are you watching more movies? What's going on?
Yeah, I had a big deep dive of random movies on the weekend.
Oh,
which
yeah?
Which is interesting.
What was the highlight? What was the star of the weekend?
Grey Gardens was the absolute star.
What's Grey Gardens?
It's
oh, please.
Didn't ask you, Tristan.
No, that's right. I don't mean to interrupt or jump in. No.
It's a great doco from 1975 of these two crazy ladies who are actually Jackie Onassis's cousin and aunt.
Okay.
Who live in this derelict mansion in the Hamptons.
Whoa.
And it's a mother-daughter odyssey.
Oh, I love anything to do with mother-daughter things. Just
I
give it to me
it.
On a little platter. Like, oh, great, this is delightful. And then highlights, yay, we loved it.
Incredibly quotable. Little Edie is now my icon.
Oh, gorgeous.
What else did I watch? Oh, I watched Showgirls. That was
Showgirls?
Another highlight.
No, it's also flying over my head. Showgirls? Is that a classic? Tristan looks like he's going to explode.
Is it a classic?
It's a trash classic of the ultimate order. It was, Well, you should say, Laura.
Again, I can't say any other word than odyssey. It really was. It's, Elizabeth Berkley is both terrible and wonderful.
Oh.
Kyle MacLachlan's in it, so that's
love
always
that.
Good.
Yeah, he's such a darling.
Kyle MacLachlan. I loved that too.
Brat recently.
Oh, yeah. Is he getting paid for that?
I don't think
he's
so.
He's doing so much free work.
I don't know what's going on, but Kyle MacLachlan and Charlie XCX spotted out together and the internet went nuts. And I think the internet is going nuts about anything adjacent to Brat at the moment. So, but I love that Kyle MacLachlan is a part of that. It was a very unexpected turn of events. Tristan, outside of the movies that we're talking about this morning, how are you? What's going on? What have you been watching?
Oh, yeah, good. Just, you know, also, seeing how everything gets connected to Brat and the wave of Charlie XCX mania, and even made me appreciate a film that we talked about last week, Long Legs, in that there's a song that Nick Cage sings in the film that became a bit of a TikTok meme.
Oh,
and then I saw someone who did the kind of apple dance to it as a kind of a joke. So, you know, look, and this is good for the film that we're going to talk about in a moment, because I think depending on where you are in popular culture, all these references will either make sense or leave you totally bewildered, because you think, you know, so for people out there, Kyle MacLachlan, oh, the guy from Twin Peaks, guy from Sex and the City, and it's like, yeah, he's also on TikTok doing like dances to pop songs by Chappell Roan and stuff.
Yeah, it's very funny. Kevin Bacon is on there too doing the Apple Dance, and he's done loads of, with his wife, who is also an actor that I can't remember.
Oh, Kira Sedgwick?
Yes. Kyra Sedgwick. Yeah, she's great too. She's arguably better at them than he is, but he seems like slightly more enthusiastic. So it is very funny, and yes, people are doing the Apple Dance to almost anything now. It's just, you don't need Charlie XCX for her to be everywhere, which I love. But I think, yes, this next movie is a great way to sort of start by talking about pop culture. I haven't seen the trailer for this movie, but I feel like I've seen the trailer for this movie just by how much publicity they're doing. But I did watch the Hot Ones episode that the main stars of this next movie did. Tristan, talk to me about Deadpool and Wolverine.
Deadpool, Wolverine, Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman. So, yeah, they're on the promotional kind of circuit. So, yeah, Hot Ones, they did chicken shop dates. they've done a show, like Gordon Ramsay now has a YouTube show, they're on there. So they're everywhere. But look, we'll start with the actors first. Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. Both of these actors, are they meaningful to you? What's your take, Laura?
I think 5 years ago, yes. I'm in my pessimism era.
Yeah.
And I'm
your
just
pessimism
tired.
Era.
Tired of it now. I haven't even watched any of their press junket stuff because
I don't think I watched
it's just
it on
not working
purpose.
On me.
I really didn't opt in and just came to me. You know?
Can't escape it. But what about you, Pam? I mean, do you think they're 5 years ago, or do you have a soft spot for either of them?
I definitely have a soft spot for Ryan Reynolds. I feel like he honestly might be in my pass basket a little bit, and I actually feel bad about that, but he just sort of ended up in there. And if anyone that doesn't know what that means, it just means that, like, they could kind of do anything, obviously barring, like, really bad things, but they could kind of do anything, do bad movies, do bad things, and I kind of just let them get away with it without it affecting what I think of them, because I think after I watched The Proposal all those years ago, it really cemented it. I didn't really know what to do about it. I think he's got great comedic timing. He's married to Blake Lively, which, you know, is the Serena van der Woodsen, you know, moment that we all needed. And I do think he's very, like, funny and charming and kind of a strange person. So I will watch things with him in it just because I'm like, well, he's in it. It's fine.
Mm.
Hugh Jackman, I'm a little the boy from Oz, you know, like I'm a little over
Oklahoma,
it.
Yeah.
I'm a little over it with Hugh Jackman. The Greatest Showman really wiped him out of my brain. I really didn't need it. So that's my hot takes this morning.
there's a good hot takes for a pair of hot ones, because so for those who are probably fans of Marvel Studios, Marvel Comics, Marvel Movies, Deadpool is a Marvel character, but they have been owned by 20th Century Fox. So this movie represents like a corporate synergy amalgamation, because basically Ryan Reynolds played this character long ago in the first solo Wolverine movie that apparently I've not seen, but it's not very good. but he always had an affinity for this character, and he produced, wrote Deadpool, and that kind of brought his career, kind of launched it. I mean, he was always a star, but it feels like he did drama, he did rom-coms, and then doing Deadpool was the thing that kind of earned him a kind of like, a bigger status and something that he's kind of rode on because of, you know, what it gives to him as a comic performer, as playing the merc with the mouth, this kind of very cheeky, R-rated kind of, doesn't take anything seriously, always kind of making jokes, and lots of violence, lots of kind of pretty puerile juvenile references to things. But we've got Deadpool 2, and now it took a while for Deadpool 3 or Deadpool and Wolverine to be made because Disney owns now 20th Century Fox, and so the rights to those characters are now underneath Marvel. So this, all these things might make sense to you, or they might not. But this film acts as a way of kind of bringing together Deadpool and Wolverine. Wolverine, played by Hugh Jackman, died off in a film called Logan, which is quite a good film. But he's come back with this new film, which is a kind of a team up where Deadpool is kind of a bit of a low point, or sort of is not sure what to do with his life. Then he is told that the timeline that he is in is going to collapse or end because in this timeline, Wolverine has died. And he has explained this by Matthew McFadden, who's in this movie from Succession. He plays a member of the and this is the kind of film where you have to kind of have a working knowledge of what's going on with some of these Marvel films, because the Time Variance Authority, the TVA, which is explained in the show's Loki, because it's all about the multiverse and all these different timelines, so they kind of monitor the timelines and keep it all in order.
I get lost in all that stuff. I really lose the plot with it. So
it depends on how much knowledge you have on this, whether this makes sense. But all of this is really kind of an excuse for lots of jokes, lots of kind of action sequences, and for Wolverine and Deadpool hanging out together. So Deadpool goes to another timeline, pulls one of the Wolverines out of there, and asks him to help him kind of restore his own timeline. And it really is just like a clothesline for all these kind of jokes and references and cameos, none of which I'll spoil. But this is kind of a film that works in the tradition now of Spider-Man No Way Home, in bringing together different movies, different franchises, different characters coming back, being part of this movie. And I think it's all in an effort to make an audience go, to have that full audience do that audible gasp, which is what happened. I went on Wednesday night with my partner, Sally. It was a pretty full cinema, and people were loving it. They were laughing loudly. They were reacting loudly to all the kind of jokes being made about Marvel movies and how they're at a low point, and that Deadpool is Marvel Jesus. He's going to bring back the franchise. Yeah, so
Marvel Messiah. Oh, my goodness.
We also have Emma Corrin in the mix, who people will know from The Crown. Yeah.
Corrin was in it. Matthew McFadden and Emma Corrin are total shocks.
That's
to
the
me.
Draw card.
Yeah, they're the draw cards. I'm not going for the other two.
So people might know Emma Corrin from The Crown and other movies, but they play another villain who is kind of Cassandra Nova, the telepathic twin of Charles Xavier, Professor X from the X-Men movies. So Emma Corrin's in the mix as a bald bad person. So look, this movie. I thought it was okay. Look, Deadpool 1, Deadpool 2, they're okay. It's not my type of humor in the sense that I feel like it's very, targeted to...
Justin's laughing because I'm nodding.
Certain demographic. But, I did enjoy parts of this movie. There were some good jokes. There were some good cameos, which I won't spoil, as I said before. But it's funny how with Ryan Reynolds, he is either... It's hard to know which is more trying, him being in the Quipmaster General mode, or being very sincere, which is, funnily enough, in this movie, which is supposed to be very irreverent and fourth wall breaking, there are still these kind of sincere scenes talking about regret and, how to mean, what's my meaning in life. So it's very odd. I think it makes the same mistakes that a lot of these movies do make. Now, Laura, I know you haven't seen, you haven't seen any of the Deadpool movies.
I have. I've seen the first and second when they came out. And I liked them at the time. Well, not so much the second, but I did like the first one.
You did like the first one, but you're not in a rush to see this new one.
No, Alex might have to go with someone else.
What is keeping you back is what you said before about them feeling...
I just don't care at this point.
Do you think it's related to that? And that's a part of kind of where Marvel is at now. After Avengers Endgame, they've kind of made lots more movies, lots more TV shows, but I think for a lot of people, unless you're kind of keeping up, it can feel a bit overwhelming with all these characters and all these references. Do you think that's a factor as well?
Yeah, I don't want to have to do homework to go and watch a movie.
Yeah,
and I'm
I
not
agree.
Watching shows that I don't care about to get one joke.
Yeah.
I just think it's, a little bit insidious.
Yeah. Oh, another franchise, but different, not Marvel related. But, what about you, Pab? I mean, you have a fondness for Ryan Reynolds. You haven't seen any of these other movies?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen any of the Deadpools.
Yeah.
It didn't look like it was going to be my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the community nature of these films and their capacity for bringing people together. And I absolutely have no interest in I'm trying to think of a non-bad word in yucking anyone's yum for this, it's a it's an expression that I did not want to say.
Yeah,
but,
it's not my favorite expression.
It's a terrifying expression, but I really couldn't think of anything else. I don't want to do that, but if it's your thing, it's your thing, but it's not my thing. I think I like Ryan Reynolds in, romantic comedy roles and silly things that he does, and I almost like him more as, in a press junket for whatever he's doing than in the actual movie itself. But Emma Corrin from The Crown, and I recently watched in Lady Chatterley's Lover alongside, can't remember his name, but he was in Skins, Matthew McFadden, iconically Mr. Darcy, and also in Succession and lots of other things. And I do love those two actors, so there's a draw card there for me. But I don't know if Hugh Jackman is the rotten egg for me in this. I think he really makes my eyelids want to close.
It's interesting because, look, this was okay, and I'm, it's out in cinemas now, and if you, love these movies, if you have the time of your life, and the audience that we were in seemed to be, so, that's awesome. I wish you all the best. But, like, there's something with Hugh Jackman in this film. I think, he's very serious in this. I mean, he's obviously kind of, the serious counterpoint to the, the wisecracking Ryan Reynolds. But it's also like, at the end you see footage of, when they first started making these movies, like the first X-Men in the 90s, and how young he looked then. And now, having to be kind of like a middle-aged actor who plays like a superhero, you still have to be kind of like ripped and jacked. And like watching him in close-up yell at Deadpool and his face is all kind of like, I'm just like, wow, this is quite a, it's quite a performance, because he does seem very serious in this. Yeah.
Superheroes can be old.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not saying that they can't be, but I'm just saying that. But the drive to make them kind of be very ripped is, and that's a whole other kind of thing as well.
That's a bigger conversation that we can have another day.
And I'm sure a reason why a lot of these actors have gone, I'm happy with the end of my 10-year contract. I'm not coming back. So we'll see. Look, I thought it was okay. There are some really funny moments that I can't spoil here. But it was. But it's also that just that feeling of kind of it's more of the same. Even though it's kind of billing itself as being very kind of like nasty humor and kind of being very like cheeky about Marvel Studios making fun of where they're at, it still feels very, it's kind of like in Barbie where they kind of had the Mattel people be the villains of the film, but it's not going to go that far in terms of
you kind of wanted the jokes to go further and land harder, but they don't really do that in this movie.
Yeah, well, it's just like, because it's it's from the corporation, so it's not going to go full bore. But anyway, Deadpool and Wolverine, if you're into it, it's out now.
Okay, out in cinemas now. Up next, we're going to be getting into Laura's film for the morning. We're going to be talking about Totem. That's coming up in a hot sec as we stay with the Blockbuster Babes.
¿Ya tienes tu deseo?
Sí.
A ver, yo ya tengo el mío, pero es secreto.
¡Ey, solecito! ¡Qué increíble está esa peluca! ¡Me encanta!
¿Puedo ir a ver a mi papá?
No, cariño. Queremos que esté muy bien en la noche.
Si tienes muy mala vibra aquí, ¡fuera de aquí! ¡Fuera!
Van a quemar el consultorio.
¡Oh, se está quemando!
¿Qué? Perdón, no tengo la respuesta.
On break, you're listening to ESG, Moody Spaced Out, I think is what it's called. You could hear this song in a cinema. We're going to talk about new movies here on Movie Squad. That's what we do. But Tristan, you love to celebrate the classics too. Trash classics to be specific. I'm the queen of the segue. You're the queen of the trash classic. And you're celebrating tonight. What are we celebrating tonight?
Well, yes, ESG are in a scene where they play the song in the Nicolas Cage cult classic Vampire's Kiss. And we're screening that tonight at Luna Leaderville at 9 p.m. But, great. It's, Long Legs is a current success, and Nick Cage is in that, and he's always been known for doing kind of far out, over the top roles. And this from 1989 is one of his finest. So yeah, it's a horror comedy, Vampire's Kiss. Check it out. It's on tonight, one night only.
Oh my god! Trash classics are always like a bit of a treasure trove of like strange things. Sometimes they go a little more modern, sometimes they go older, sometimes it's just a real trash classic. Vampire's Kiss on tonight at 9 p.m. Gorgeous stuff, but we're getting back to the new movies for the time being. You are listening to Movie Squad here on Breakfast on RTRFM 92.1. My name is Pam, Tristan's here with you, and Laura is going to tell us about Totem.
Yeah, so Totem is the second film from Mexican writer-director Lila Aviles. Her first film was called The Chambermaid. I have not seen that, but I definitely want to get to that now. This one's a one-dayer kind of slice of life family drama. That's the setup is that there's this young girl called Sol. She's 7 years old. We meet her and her mother in a public bathroom preparing a song, and it's giving Florida Project vibes a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
And then they get to this house, which is Sol's grandfather's house, and basically the setup is Sol's father, Tona, is very, very ill. He's terminally ill, and we're here for his last birthday, which is very likely to be his last birthday. So it's kind of a grief celebration rolled into one. And when we get there, the house is kind of already chaos, but it's like this big loving family and it's a nice chaos. So one aunt is washing her hair in the sink, one aunt's trying to make a cake while her precocious little child is talking her little head off and trying to make sure she's all taken care of at the same time. Burns the cake, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's all fine. Sol doesn't understand why she isn't allowed to see her father just yet, because we see Tona and we understand why. He's so ill, he's just getting up to go to his own birthday celebration is going to be a bit of a task. But we basically just see this evening through the eyes of a child, and we slowly come to terms with her realization that she's going to have to process some grief. But it's not all doom and gloom. There's lots of kind of light interspersed moments between it. There's lots of animal kind of motifs making their way through. The contrast between the personalities of the precocious little girl who's her cousin and Sol is quite evident. This film, I read a review about it that said it felt more like a family drama, like a family video than a film. And I think that's one of the film's greatest strengths because it's so realistic. Even if you haven't been through this horrible kind of traumatic period of losing a parent or celebrating them while they're still here, we get to see Sol listen in on hard adult conversations, and it really took me back to being a child and kind of eavesdropping on things that you don't really understand. It just feels beautifully familiar, and you get to see lovely kind of family bonds that are really pushed to their limits as this kind of stressful event comes upon itself. There's a great scene where one aunt gets a medium to come in to cleanse the house, which is kind of like a moment of levity, and yet they haven't paid the nurse yet for looking after Tona. So it kind of like tackles a lot of different kind of conversations on different layers. One of my favourite scenes in this film is actually towards the end. And it's when Sol and her mother give a performance for Tona. She stands on her mother's shoulders in a clown wig. And I think it might even be from the same opera that the song from The Fifth Element is from. But it just kind of filled me with this indescribable, I don't know, not sadness. I definitely weeped from it a little bit. But it wasn't necessarily a sadness. It was just kind of like this beautiful, nostalgic feeling. It kind of reminded me of After Sun. Okay. How I felt after Sun. And there's just like a lot going on. I'd like to revisit it to kind of get like a better kind of feeling about what all of these things mean.
Sure.
But this film really, I think, speaks to you on an emotional level. And I would really recommend it because it's not like, it is sad, obviously. There's sad things going on. But I just felt out like it was a really healthy depiction of grief and celebration, kind of, and the dance that they take together.
Yeah, wow.
I've heard that Lila Aviles was a young mother and she's dedicated it to her daughter as well. So it's obviously a very personal piece for her. And the young girl who plays Sol, Naima Sentiez, is phenomenal. You watch her face kind of just trying to figure these things out, and she is so young, but you're taken back to being a young person and being met with quite difficult adult scenarios and just trying to, take it all in. What does it all mean?
Yeah.
There's a beautiful scene of her just staring into a birthday cake.
Wow.
And you just, like, she's such a young person. She's a non-actor as well. Mm. And you just, like, get this wave of understanding and empathy for this little girl who
I love
thought it was phenomenal.
I love a slice of life movie and a window into other people's lives, especially in a window into another experience that I'm not having, or a window into something like grief like this and how a family might experience it. Tristan, have you also seen this movie?
Yes, yeah. And, like, it's the complete opposite of Deadpool versus Ed Wolverine in that, you know, that's a movie where they have to make things happen. So they bend over backwards to manufacture a scenario. And I could see a version of this movie where they would, like, increase the dramatic stakes, or there might be more kind of, like, revelations or moment, but, like, it just doesn't do that, and it's so much better for it, because it just, as Laura was saying, was just very observational, but it felt very true, even though you might not be from this family. It's a quite a large family, and there's this, like, quite nice house that's in the not the immediate father who's dying, but his father, who seems to be a professional therapist or something of the sort. But the way that things kind of get revealed, you know, through the dialogue, through that they've been through this before with his mother, like, having passed away as well. The acting is really great, and the focus on this young girl, as I just completely agree with Laura, is phenomenal in that you just, you know, watching them process things. And it definitely, and After Sun is a good comparison, because it's kind of, I guess, one of those films where it deepens in the reflection. So after the movie's finished, you think about it more, and then it kind of, you know, you just feel it a bit more. You kind of understand, you know, what might have seemed like a kind of, like, ordinary moment kind of has a bit more kind of depth to it.
Yeah, a little bit more gravity, little bit. And I think that those movies do allow us to look at our own lives differently, and they do really stick around with you. After Sun is a great reference for that, and was a movie, like, was my favourite movie of last year. And I think those kind of family home movies bring out this really wonderful sense of warmth and understanding, and it's really lovely. You feel a little bit like you're getting a window into somebody else's life, and to be able to cast that and paint that in a cinematic fashion is a real talent, and to make it feel well-worn and comfortable and communicative in a way that is familiar and easy and, you know, with lightness, but exploring those bigger issues. I think that takes quite a lot of skill and a really light, clever hand. So that's definitely, you know, to the triumph of Lila Aviles. Great to hear, Laura. That was a beautiful review and a really lovely encouragement to go see the movie. This is definitely one I reckon I'm going to go check out. Some very different movies on Movie Squad this morning, but there's always a little bit extra to find on the podcast. If you want to listen to Movie Squad wherever you get your podcasts, every week they're here, the Blockbuster Babes, getting us across new movies, and they'll be back next week. But for this week, thanks very much for letting us in on some movies. Tristan and Laura, have a great rest of your morning.
You too.
Movie Squad is sponsored by Luna Palace Cinemas, WA's premier independent cinemas, bringing the best film content and cinematic events to Perth. Come and enjoy the Luna Palace experience.
Well, there you go. Thank you for listening to our episode, the on-air chat from Movie Squad. But now we're in the podcast zone of the experience, and Laura, is because I know that you're a fan, I remember from when we were talking
the last time you reviewed The Beast and talking about kind of horror films or films that have a certain intensity. And one film that is now, you know, a success but was marketed with a lot of intensity was Long Legs. And that was a discussion that me and Simon had in the last episode of Movie Squad. We won't get into spoiler territories, even though it's been a week that it's been out now. But what did you think of Long Legs? Were you kind of primed for it being an intense experience?
I was super primed. I think everyone was primed because of the very primey marketing. I fully fell victim to that. Not victim, but it was incredible marketing. And I have to admit that I was a little bit disappointed when I came out of Long Legs, because I had just gotten into the zone of, I want to get absolutely destroyed by a horror movie. And it just didn't, it wasn't that movie.
Yeah.
I did love the atmosphere, and I loved Micah Monroe because I just think she's fantastic. Mm. As much as I am a massive Nick Cage fan, I found him a bit distracting. And I don't think it was his fault.
Yeah.
Just maybe it was the wrong choice for, like, this serial killer who's meant to be, I can't watch Nick Cage do Nick Cage and put that out of my mind. So it was kind of like watching a performance, I suppose.
Yeah, the on the night after we recorded that episode, I was looking through TikTok and you know, we spoke about various memes and but yeah, the song that Nick Cage one of the songs he sings it's a classic Nick Cage way he sings in Long Legs, but that becoming a meme, and that made me appreciate it a bit more, just because of how, you know, I think I liked the wacky parts of the film, even though it kind of ruined or dulled the intensity or the promised intensity. But that made me like it a little bit more, even though maybe that character needed to be in a different movie, or like, I think recently just released, they released a song. It looks like it was kind of like a deleted moment from the film. But, you know, people asking, what about the backstory? Where does this character come from? And it feels like they had ideas, but they're never quite explained in the film.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stuff that you're like, ah, that makes sense. But it wasn't hinted at in the film. You're just hearing it outside of it.
Yeah.
And it does kind of feel like it didn't fully successfully come together. I would kind of like to revisit it with a new mindset and different expectations.
Yeah, I have the feeling, though, that if I watched it again, you know, I should watch it again at some point, that I think there might be less to it.
Yeah, that's always the worry.
Well, what about, you know, we talk about Letterboxd being a kind of a great social media way of discussing and noting, journaling, and recommending films. But what were the last four that you would... Because you're on there.
Yes. Yeah, I use it as a diary more than anything. Mm. I watched the Wolfman, the Lon Chaney, I believe, isn't that?
Yeah, so this is a classic Wolfman, the one from the kind of like 50s.
One of the shortest, tightest movies I've ever seen. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It didn't blow my socks off.
Yeah.
But I loved the forest set that they used for all of the werewolfy transformations. I think the werewolf transformation for 1941 was done quite well as well.
Yeah.
The character just was a bit of a creep, and not in the Woolworths? werewolf version of him was fine. I'm talking about the human character was a little bit of a creep. So that put me off a little bit. I watched Angst, a German film from 1983. That was very much a come, not get ready with me, but come murder with me on the side of a serial killer. And that was quite effective, actually. We just watched that randomly on a Saturday during the day. and that's how I would recommend watching it.
Right.
I also watched Hundreds of Beavers a couple of weeks ago, which I absolutely loved.
Yes.
I don't know how people are going to be able to access that.
That's a good question, because I think, because that's showed as part of the Revelation Film Festival, and hopefully, I think it should be available digitally, because, I didn't get a chance to see it in the cinema. I saw a screener link for it, but I would have loved to be in a cinema for it, because it was one of those films that the more it went on, the more I really started to enjoy it, and the kind of Looney Tunes approach to just being about gags, being about kind of jokes, and the whole, you know, in those cartoons where they kind of, they do a joke and then they do it again, but there's a, like a, you know, a variation.
You think it's going to wear out, but it just keeps gaining momentum and working even more, which is amazing.
There, I did have noted that it's on my watch list, but if you are on Tubi, which is a free streaming service with ads, but they have a good back catalogue of kind of weird and interesting films, but the previous film that those filmmakers made, Lake Michigan Monster, is on there. So I'm looking forward to catching up with that. I don't know if it will be as good as Hundreds of Beavers, but yeah, I'd co-sign that recommendation.
I would definitely watch that as well. I loved the music in Hundreds of Beavers as well. It was the guy's dad and just some little band, and it was great. Bit of an earworm. The other thing I watched was In a Violent Nature, which is just kind of like a walking simulator with a serial killer. And people were not loving it. And because I went in with certain expectations of it not being great, I actually quite enjoyed it.
And this is we'd say it's an advanced screening because this is coming out to cinemas soon in August. And I think I'm sure at some point, Simon and I will talk about it. I know that Simon's seen it. And it's one of those other films, a bit like Long Legs, doesn't have the same marketing campaign, but I think for fans of horror films that have been, like, have heard, like, some discussion about it and that it's taking a different approach to what is a kind of, a classic slasher, cliche. How did you feel about, what it did to the slasher genre?
Well, so I have not actually seen any of the Friday the 13th, and I know that that's very much the inspiration for it. So I don't know if that would annoy people who are massive super fans of Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty well handled. I think one of my favourite reviews that I saw on Letterboxd was thump, 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 kill. And it's basically just, that's exactly right. It's the ASMR version of following this guy who, I don't even know if you get a name of him.
Yeah.
But he's just this slow but steady killing machine. I think it's a good example of the slasher genre.
I think, I'm sure we'll talk about it more when we get to it, but like that, the idea being that we are focused on following the slasher killer rather than the victims.
Yeah.
Usually in Friday the 13th, we're hanging out with these like teenagers or the camp supervisors, and then the killer emerges and then, does his grisly business. But here we're just like, it's almost like we're just,
it's like there's a GoPro behind him, basically.
Taking long walks before we get to that point where we see the grisly business. So I'm very intrigued by it, so I'm looking forward to catching up with it. But it's good to hear, an advanced recommendation from yourself, Laura, particularly one who just, from that list alone has an interest or, enjoys some of the more kind of intense forms of film.
Still hoping for that experience again. If it's not Long Legs, then don't know what it will be, but any day now.
We've still got plenty of months to go, so hopefully we can get a good, nice, intense experience before the end of the year. But thank you so much, Laura. It's great to hear some of these kind of recent recommendations and definitely ones that I still haven't seen or need to catch up with, like The Wolfman, the original Wolfman. But it was also great to hear your review of Totem. Talk about Ryan Reynolds and all that we covered in this episode of the podcast. So thank you again.
Well, thanks for having me.